Is POSH really an acronym?
What exactly is a backronym?
Was a butterfly ever a flutterby?
Does the F word have anything to do with kings? Learn all this and more on this episode of Words Unraveled. And just in case you didn't catch that last note, this episode has some salty language in it.
Yeah, there are rude words, but we're not actually being rude. Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Zafaris, author of Words from Hell, Once Upon a Word, and Useless Etymology. And today we are going to dive into some etymology myths.
That's right. We're going deep down into the debunking bunker to find out which of your favorite stories behind various words are actually true and which ones are false.
Speaking of debunking, are you aware of where this word comes from?
I have no idea. I always assumed it would probably got something to do with a bunker.
So we'll talk about this in a future episode, but this is an example of an unpaired word or an orphaned negative. And bunk is one of these. Debunk corresponds to bunk, and it was once in use. It's an obsolete American English word short for bunkum, which means nonsense, but it's spelled B-U-N-K-U-M, and it's a misspelling of North Carolina's Buncombe County, B-U-N-C-O-M-B-E. And apparently in 1820, a politician from North Carolina gave a long, boring, nonsensical speech to the U.S. Congress that he addressed to his home county of Buncombe. And in most cases, the D means down or away from, but in this case, it's an intensifier too. So add it to bunk, that nonsensical speech, and you get debunk. Not just nonsense, but complete nonsense.
I remember the first time I heard the term bunkum. I was a school child and I reacted in the only way that a school child would, with a giggle, particularly because I misheard it as, the first syllable as bum, and then it becomes all the more hilarious. Anyway, that's a real etymology, right? But we're going to talk about some etymology myths, aren't we? Can I start off with one? Because there's one I want to get off my chest.
What would you like to declare to be bunk?
So have you ever heard the story about the word posh and where that comes from?
I think I've heard it before, but remind me, because I know it has something to do with abbreviations.
There's an old wives' tale that this is a acronym, that it's not just posh, it's P-O-S-H, and that it stands for Port Out Starboard Home. So it supposedly goes back to when people were taking trips by boat from Britain to India, right? And only the wealthiest people on board would be given certain cabins. And those were the cabins that were the coolest in either direction. Those cabins would either be on the port side on the way out or the starboard side on the way back or the way home. So the story goes that the people that were going to be given these upper class cabins had their tickets stamped with P-O-S-H, Port Out Starboard Home. It is a lovely story and it is absolute nonsense.
It sounds like one of those that sounds just a little bit too tidy and talesy to be true. So what is the actual origin of posh?
Okay, so I mean, it's all very smug of me to say, and it's total nonsense. The main reason I'm saying that is because we've never found one of these tickets with P-O-S-H on it. But we also don't have a certain etymology for where P-O-S-H, posh, comes from. So it's not an acronym. It is a word, posh. And there are three possible explanations, I would say. So the first one is that there is an old word, posh, that was just slang for a coin, for a halfpenny, in fact. And it sort of extended in its use to mean just having money, right? So you can see how that could eventually end up meaning someone who has a lot of money. There's also a usage of the word posh from a couple of centuries ago that meant a dandy. And again, you can see how it's not a huge leap from a dandy to someone who is very wealthy. But another interesting explanation is that it comes from an Urdu phrase. So, I mean, I find this one.
Interesting.
Yeah, it also feels like quite a big leap, a bit like the port out starboard home one, but bear with me. And it's that it comes from the Urdu Safed Push, which meant dressed in white. In other words, that means well dressed, so therefore affluent. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think that logic is beautiful. I agree that it probably makes more sense to me for it to be, say, a cant term or slang, more from the Britain area. But you never know. And sometimes, especially, you know, if it were related or used by sailors, then it could make sense that it came from a region where people sailed to. So I think that is interesting, and I like the different possibilities on that one. I it frustrates me, but also like enchants me how often we have several viable explanations for a word's origin. And I love exploring all of those angles.
It's amazing when you just think about the variety of different possible explanations, because what it reminds you of is the fact that our language has been developing for so, so long. And sometimes it has found different routes to end up in exactly the same place.
Absolutely. It reminds me, Posh in particular, reminds me that there are so many false acronyms out there. People tend to want words to be acronyms when they simply aren't. In fact, acronyms weren't very common in English until, say, the mid-1800s or so, simply because that wasn't a popular trend at the time. It was mostly popularized by the business and technology world. There are a few exceptions, but not a ton. And I love that many of them tend to skew nautical. In fact, etymology myths in general tend to skew nautical. And another one that I've written about a lot is, and you'll excuse my French, but I did write the book Words from Hell, which involves a lot of naughty words. So we are going to talk about shit.
Oh, you fell off my chair there. Hold on. I know where that word comes from, right? It's as Germanic as they come, that word. So what other story are people telling themselves about it?
So there is a rumor, and you'll see this one floating around the internet pretty regularly, but the rumor is that it is an abbreviation for ship high in transit. The myth has been around for a long time, nowhere near as long as the word shit itself, which simply used to be the word for feces in Old English, or it's ultimately a variation of that. But this false origin suggests that some types of manure had to be stored on higher decks when being shipped across the sea so that they would not get wet. Therefore, they were stamped with S-H-I-T. Now, that one seems like an even larger leap, I think, than posh. And it absolutely is, because we can trace shit back to its earliest roots.
To its grim origins. Indeed. Can well imagine sailors very deliberately creating that acronym, though, can't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Another one of these is the word tip. I remember a friend very proudly telling me once that tip was an acronym, and it was for to ensure promptness. And my riposte at the time was, well, it would be to ensure promptness, wouldn't it? It'd be tep. Although actually, inshore and ensure are, etymologically speaking, exactly the same word. So I wasn't right about that, but I was right that it was BS, let's just say. I don't know why I just held back from saying the word shit. We've already said it five times. But anyway, we don't necessarily have a better alternative explanation for where tip comes from, but it's probably something along the lines of, you know, tipping something towards someone so that they can take it.
That's, I believe, also the deal with, I want to say tag is also sometimes said to be an acronym for touch and go, like the game, which makes a lot of sense. That one is satisfyingly sensical, so to speak, versus some of these others that are absolute nonsense. But unfortunately, it's probably just another word for actually tapping people.
Yeah, it's nice when they're highly appropriate rather than when they've just been sort of shoehorned. I always thought that save our souls was a bit shoehorny for SOS.
I agree.
Or sometimes, I mean, save our ships is better, but it's not necessarily used on a ship, and it wouldn't be about multiple ships normally. But obviously, SOS is just the way it is because it is the quickest. Well, not the quickest, but, you know, quick and clear to type on Morse code. You know, it's dot, dot, mm-hmm. dot, dash, 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 dot, dot, dot. Not save ourselves.
I was reading not too long ago that an earlier radio distress call was CQD, which also, contrary to popular belief, is not intended to be short for anything. Some rumors say it's come quickly distress. Rather, CQ was a general call to ships and land stations and not one that was meant to summon swift help. And then the D added the idea of distress. So I guess it is connected to distress in some ways, but CQ is not especially connected to come quickly.
I think you're really pushing it when you're starting to work punctuation into the phrase like that one.
I'd say the most ludicrous one I've ever heard. And I saw this one going around on TikTok and I could not believe that anyone actually believed it, but it was newspaper.
I know the one about news, but wait, what, the newspaper as well?
That's right. So the true origin is just that it's short for new things. And earlier, the French term nouvelle, which means the same thing, was used in much the same way. News is new information. But there are various claims, none of them true, that include the notion that it stands for notable events, weather and sports, or north, east, south and west. Or to explain the entirety of newspaper, some have claimed north, east, west, south, past and present event report, which is hilariously inaccurate.
Do you think people have genuinely believed that one?
I have seen plenty of people on the internet who surely seem to, but I don't know that any etymologist has ever done so.
And why would you take that explanation over the fact that it's clearly made of paper and it's got news on it?
Yep. It's paper with new information on it. That's the end of the story. It's not as interesting as one might hope, but it does make sense.
You know, Charles Dickens is credited with creating one of these acronyms. Can we call them backronyms? You know, a backronym is where you start off with the word and then try to come up with what it stands for afterwards. I suppose it's not quite that because the word already exists, right? But Charles Dickens is blamed for the rumor that the word cabal is actually an acronym. An acronym for 5 plotters, supposedly, who were plotting against King Charles II.
No kidding.
And their names were Clifford, Arlington, Buckingham, Ashley, and Lauderdale.
Those are the most British names I have ever heard.
Except for Lauderdale has a distinct Floridian sound to
it.
Yeah,
but you're right.
Otherwise, yeah, he put that in one of his books, but you know, it's not true. Charles Dickens is leading us on with that one. The term has been around for a very long time. It probably comes from a Hebrew word, Kabbalah, which means received or received law. It's a bit of a jump to get from there to the idea of a cabal, but nevertheless, smarter people than me say that's where it comes from.
That's neat. I would be interested in digging a little deeper into that one in the future. I was writing about backronyms not too long ago, and it seems the definition has, you know, a couple different takes. It could refer to those false acronyms that we've seen above, where pop cultural or folk etymology influences this fanciful belief that it was originally created as an acronym, or it can refer to like deliberately created acronyms like Charles Dickens there. And I love when they actually have practical applications, like the term care package is arguably both a traditional acronym and a backronym by this definition. It was first used in 1945 to describe aid packages sent to Europe after World War II by charities under the program the Cooperative for American Remittances to Europe, which is an acronymic use of the word care. Obviously, the term care existed before, but the collocation care package wasn't found frequently before it was used as an acronym. And then later, that was changed to the Cooperative for Assistance and Relief Everywhere, phrasing intended to indicate Europe, aid beyond Europe, but to retain the acronym and make it make sense. So it's a backronym in the sense that the meaning was applied later to the word.
US government are big fans of these things.
Oh, absolutely.
My favorite of all time is the USA Patriot Act, which I think a lot of people might already know. But
that one's such a stretch.
Yeah, but it is. But I think there's an elegance to it. So it's uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism.
That makes it sound so much less nefarious than it is, though.
I like just the sort of folksy respect I have for them for coming up with the acronym. That's got nothing to do with what I think about the legislation itself. Right. Although I don't approve of using A to stand for America in this. It's cheating to have the A in USA stand for America.
I think so, yeah. I agree with that. One that I actually do like, the message and the meaning behind is BISON, which is the U.S. Geological Survey's Biodiversity Information Serving Our Nation's Species, which is a program for keeping track of and protecting species, including the American bison.
Oh, yeah. No, full marks for that.
Yeah, I think that one's very nice.
You already started off on rude words.
Oh, yeah. I think I know what you're going to say here.
No, I'm not. I know what you think I'm going to say, but I shied away from it. But if you want to go there, you can go there. I was going to go for a slightly milder one.
Oh.
And that is the word crap.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Do you know about this one?
Are we talking about Thomas Crapper and the fact that he didn't inspire that word?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we are. So it's not a backronym. It's not an acronym. It's not a fake acronym. But it is a sort of false etymology to say that the name is inspired by the man himself. In fact, the word crapper, you know, it arguably could have been, but still isn't. It's an Americanism, really. Crapper, and the guy was from London. This is, by the way, he was a plumber and toilet manufacturer from London. He was around in the Victorian era. And yeah, it's just a happy coincidence that his name happened to be related to what could happen with a product with which he was associated. And actually, I think some companies used that fact in their sort of publicity, which helped to sort of perpetuate this false etymology. But yeah, nothing to do with Mr. Crapper.
I was digging into him a little bit and noted that he the saying is that he invented the toilet. And so I looked up his original patents because I was like, well, I want to find out if he did. And it turns out the wow. The patents were for like a piece of plumbing and not particularly the toilet either. So it is a happy coincidence. And it is interesting that the word crap did become American slang not too long after he was doing most of his work, but they don't seem to have any connection whatsoever. And it was mostly just college students coming up with a naughty-ish word.
Now that we've alluded to it, do we go into the other word that if...
I mean, I wrote the book on this. I feel like we have to.
Quite literally, in which case, take it away.
All right. So this one I hear all the time is fuck an acronym? It is not.
Sorry, I could just the ghost of my grandma coming back from the dead to give me a slap around the face just for even hearing the word.
A little Easter egg in my book, Words from Hell, is that I have a few lines where I apologize to my grandmother, Grammy. It's like, sorry, Grammy, I'm swearing too much. You're talking about sex too much. in any case, this word, much like shit, is easily traceable back to earlier forms in Old and Middle English. It had a variety of different spellings, so it obviously can't be an acronym because it had extra syllables on it. It was spelled different ways. It was very much in use for the sex act at the time. The claim that I usually see is that it's either for, there too, for unlawful carnal knowledge. Which is also funny because at the time when fuck was first recorded, the word knowledge was spelled with a C. It was spelled C-N-A-W-L-E-C-E. And the other one here is fornication under consent of the king. The idea being that you, in order really? To make a like a pairing, you have to get permission from the king, which generally speaking, you did not. And at the time, king was spelled C-Y-N-I-N-G. So it couldn't possibly be an acronym for that.
It goes back. Well, no, it doesn't. I always got lost in the line. It goes back as far as Old English, but of course it doesn't. Yeah, of course. I mean, the actual word does.
Right.
Not the acronym. Yes.
Mm-hmm, not so much. In fact, the word fuck is recorded before the word fornication in English. So that also wouldn't make much sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because the French will have brought that one over, won't they?
Instead, there is some confusion about where it actually came from. The actual root of it is thought to, it's definitely Germanic, but whether it means to press hard or to beat, this is one that was cited by George Carlin in one of his routines, which he wasn't wrong to cite it because it was in a book by Joseph T. Shipley, who included that theory in a 1984 book on word origins. But it doesn't make a lot of sense chronologically speaking. So it might be rather a word from a word for moving restlessly or fidgeting or flirting or striking or pushing, perhaps from a Scandinavian source. So we have a lot of options. All of them seem to require bumping of various bits.
Such a child. Right. So any more of these? I mean, I can only think of one word that's more of that's worse. And I don't think anyone's ever claimed that's an acronym, have they? Let's save that for our episode on swear words, Amy.
All right. I have one like spin-off on fuck you. Some people will somehow claim that it was associated with the term pluck you. It's a very interesting story, but also extremely false. It says that the
That's you Y-E spelled
Y-E-W, that's right.
Yeah.
Apparently in French in various conflicts, depending on who's telling the story, but often at the 1415 Battle of Agincourt, people would cut off the middle fingers of English archers wielding bows of yew. So to taunt the French English archers who hadn't been captured would flip their middle finger and yell things like, "We can still pluck yew," which again,
I've got to tell you, you're wrong on this one, just because I wouldn't expect you to know, but it's actually, it's these two fingers
I see. Okay.
That this story is about. This is swearing in Britain in a way that it's not swearing in America, and I shouldn't even be doing it. I'm doing it at the screen. What's gone wrong with this podcast so soon in the run? It is the archer story from Agincourt. But I didn't know that the pluck you thing was also from the same time.
It just tells you, it just goes to show how far off the rails this myth has gone, that it's being used to, various gestures and phrases are being used to explain it in, you know, and they can't get the story straight. So just shows how mythical this one truly is.
I actually don't know whether the two fingers thing, by the way, I realized it's a podcast and I didn't say which fingers they are. It's the middle one and the index finger. But that's the thing I should look up. And when we'll do an episode on gestures, which I think are also an important thing to talk about at some point, we can have a look at that one as well.
We can get into the digitus impudicus, as they said in Latin.
I've never heard that before.
It basically means the impudent or the indecent finger.
Oh, we got to indecent fingers. Can we move on? Can we move on? You know, actually, I was going to say, can we move on to something light and...
Let's do that.
Talk about butterflies.
I love this one.
I quite often get people saying, contacting me saying, "Hey, Rob, I don't know if you know, but butterfly is a spoonerism of the phrase flutter by." And
I get that one too.
It's charming. It's really charming, but it's not true. It's actually a word we've had since Old English, and you can compare it with other Germanic words. Like in Dutch, they had the word botervlieg, which just meant butterfly. But the Dutch had lots of names for the same fly, because it is a fly, I think, right? They used to call them butterflies. They used to call them butterwives. They would call it a butter witch as well.
Ooh.
And we're back here again. They would call it a butter shite. Do you know why they would call it a butter shite?
I've heard this one. Does it have to do with either the fact that they ate butter supposedly off of people's windowsills, or that their excrement looks yellow?
It's both of those things. Indeed.
Excellent.
We don't know which one it is. Yeah, but their excrement does look like butter. I've never tasted it, but it does look like butter.
Please don't. I wouldn't recommend it.
Can you imagine how many butterflies you'd have to get through just for one slice of toast? There's no point.
Now we're going there. So I have one here, just to kind of bring it home. I often hear that slang is short for shortened language, which that's a common myth. There's no historical record to indicate that was ever true. And it also doesn't qualify for a few reasons. First, slang terms aren't necessarily shorter than the terms they replace. Take, for instance, Cockney rhyming slang like raspberry tart and short for fart, since clearly we're on this recurring thread. And then some slang terms crop up without precisely replacing or shortening things. Like the term, I hate myself for saying this, but the flash in the pan Gen Z term chuggy, supposedly coined by a student in 2013, describes people, especially millennials, accused of being slightly off trend and sporting passe fashion, like live, laugh, love signs. And the slang invention has no clear inspiration from other terms. It's not a shortening of anything. And that is often the case with slang words. Most likely it came from older slang words themselves for people who sort of like sling the jaw. I've heard a connection to, there's a connection to a Nordic phrase meaning that, but also implying to abuse someone with words or to speak casually or to sling yourself around or hang loose.
Actually, this reminds me of something that you told me, which is that we've already got a myth surrounding the origin of the word riz, a word that appears to have only just been invented, so far as I can tell. It's short for charisma, right?
So the person who created it, it's a YouTuber who created it. It is accepted to be short for riz by, or for charisma, by pretty much everyone who uses it. It makes sense. It stands in place of the word charisma. But the person who coined it says that it wasn't specifically inspired by charisma. I think that at this point we can kind of say that most people who use it are using it as a shortening of that word.
It just is, isn't it? They're having us on.
Yeah, it's just got to be that way, right?
It just has to be that.
It makes more sense than for it to have come up out of nowhere.
And if it's enough for just a YouTuber to coin it and say that it means something else, then let us as YouTubers point out, no, it is. It's short for charisma. And thus it is so.
Just a little fun fact related to slang. In 19th century American English, there was briefly a word, slangwanger, that was used to mean someone who uses abusive language or a ranting partisan. Sadly, that one's obsolete, but I think we should bring it back, especially in light of the upcoming U.S. elections.
Oh, there's going to be so much slangwanging going on around that election.
Look, see, we're doing it. Bringing it back. We're going everywhere here. We've got sex, we've got excrement, now we have politics. We've gone to 100% with this podcast officially.
We should talk about folk etymologies, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I'll just briefly explain what a folk etymology is, and then we'll give some examples. But a folk etymology is basically where a word itself has changed to fit a false idea of its origin. And there are many more of these in our language than you might think. Cockroach is a really good simple example, right? It comes from the Spanish cucaracha, but English people couldn't quite make sense of what that word was, English speakers. So they had the word cock and they had the word roach, and this kind of was like a roach. So we ended up calling it a cockroach. There are a lot more of these. Animals and plants seem to be like the things that get folk etymologies.
I imagine that's because they tend to be from unfamiliar languages. Like one example is mongoose, which is from the language Telugu, which is an unfamiliar language to most English speakers. So despite the fact that these creatures have nothing to do with geese, they've sort of absorbed that spelling nonetheless. And in the same vein as cockroach, it reminds me that the word cocktail is most likely from the French word coquetier, which is a word for an egg cup in which Sazerac cocktails were first served in New Orleans.
Okay, so it does have something to do with a cock or a bird in that respect.
Sort of, yeah.
The actual origin. Yeah, mongoose couldn't look less like a goose, really, could
right.
it? It looks like it's kind of rodent. Or is it a rodent or is it? Or is it a mongoose?
I believe it's a weasel. A weasel of some kind.
It's a type of weasel, mongoose. Yeah, another one. This is one I really like. This is one that we have put right, though, because asparagus used to be known as sparrowgrass.
Huh.
Because people couldn't make sense of the Latin name, asparagus. It looks kind of like grass. English people knew what a sparrow was. So asparagus became sparrowgrass.
Sparrowgrass. That's very cool.
Well, it's asparagus season. It's just starting here in Germany, and the place goes into an absolute frenzy. It is
Spargel, right?
Everywhere.
Is that how you say that?
Spargel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stimmt. Anyway, we're getting away from the fact that sparrowgrass is an adorable name, and I wish it was still called that. But there was a concerted effort to reinstall the original Latin spelling.
That's no fun.
No fun at all.
My favorite example of folk etymology is the word outrage, which has nothing to do with the words out or rage, but is an adaptation of the Latin ultraticum, meaning excess, which is also why we say that an outrageous outfit doesn't make you rage. It's out there. It's excessive.
But it seems to fit so well, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. It adapted, it went through Old French where it became ultrage, O-L-T-R-A-G-E, which was understandably misunderstood by English speakers as combining out and rage.
I was reading a Middle English text, as one does, the other day, and that had the word in it. And I wasn't sure whether I was supposed to pronounce it outrage or outrage. I was wondering when it turned into an ow sound instead of an ooh sound.
That's a good question.
Because that's good. That's when the problem starts, isn't it?
And that sounds like a vowel shift shenanigan.
I'm sure it is. The bloody great vowel shift. Responsible for so many of our problems. Another one, Jerusalem artichoke. You know about this one?
Oh, I've heard this, but I don't remember.
Well, I mean, it's just a total mess, Jerusalem artichoke, because it's obviously not from Jerusalem, and it's not even an artichoke, the Jerusalem artichoke. So the Jerusalem bit comes from an Italian word for a sunflower, the Italian word for a sunflower, because a Jerusalem artichoke is a type of sunflower, it's a sunflower root. And the Italian for sunflower is girasole. Again, I think I keep pronouncing Italian words with a Spanish accent. Sorry.
Sounds like Jerusalem. That's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it's just people making sense of an unfamiliar word. But by applying a word that they do know, and in this case, it was Jerusalem. Artichoke is a much more complicated story, and one that I'm not going to go that deep into because it involves messing up at every sort of stage of its development after the Italian artichoccio, right? And then it ends up in French, where they turn it into artichaut, maybe conflating it with the idea of being warm. I don't know. As in C-H-A-U-D, which is the French for hot. And then, it ends up in English as an artichoke. Sometimes it's a heartichoke because I guess there's a lot of nutrients in the heart of an artichoke. That's the best bit, isn't it? And the choke bit was maybe because the sort of solid heart of it could somehow choke you, or that the plant itself was fairly invasive and would choke other plants that were living around it. But Jerusalem artichoke is just way off, way off.
That's interesting. I have a turtle named Artichoke, as a matter of fact.
Oh,
he's green and looks like one.
Oh, that's adorable. And does he have a big heart?
Oh, of course. He's a good fella. But I find that happens. It seems to happen with plants, as you mentioned, quite a lot. Another one is wormwood, which is used in spirits like absinthe and vermouth and has sort of psychoactive, poisonous, medicinal properties, some of which, only a few of which have been like clinically observed. But it's from wermod, I believe, which is unrelated to the words worm and wood. One theory about the true elements is that wer means man, which we know to be true, and then the mod element means courage. So maybe the plant gives you courage when you consume it.
Nice.
There was another theory, though, that may have influenced it, is that it could repel larvae and insects, like worms. So, for example, in the Book of St. Albans, which we will absolutely talk about in future episodes.
Oh, yes, one of my favorites.
So good. But it has a huge section on caring for hawks, and apparently wormwood could be fed to hawks to cure mites. I don't know whether that's true. Maybe don't feed it to your hawk.
Anyone with a hawk? Any hawkers listening? Is that what you call someone who's got a hawk? A hawker? That's not
I feel
just
like there's another word for it, but it's slipping my mind.
Whoa, okay. just you know, feed it well. Feed it well.
Right.
Chaise lounge. I've heard a chaise longue called a chaise lounge, and I have to say only ever on American television. But that is quite a modern bit of
folk etymology. It does make sense, certainly.
It does. It's what one does, but really it's just a long chair, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Chaise longue.
I've also read recently that a pickaxe does not have the word axe in it. It was called a picasse in Middle English, and it was ultimately derived from the Latin picus, meaning woodpecker, with the blade on one end shaped like a woodpecker's beak. But apparently, even though it has an axe-like blade on one end, it wasn't, you know, originally involved in the name of the tool. But it's a very understandable one that because it both picks and axes.
That one works perfectly, doesn't it? Yeah.
All right. So there you have it. Some fantastical tales about some of your favorite words. You may have learned something new today, and this is your reminder to always be skeptical when you encounter a word origin story that has a little bit too tidy of a tale behind it.
That's it. If someone comes up to you and says, "Oh, this is an acronym," actually, just look it up. Just double check, because most of the time it just turns out it isn't. Thanks a lot for joining us for this edition of Words Unraveled. We'll catch you next time.